Uber reports its largest ever quarterly loss.
I think generally the thing that's been weighing on Uber more macro is the world is more competitive than they would like it to be.
And a shortage of a medicine used to treat immune disorders is forcing hospitals to suspend treatment for many patients.
There's just been a sort of persistent chronic case of drug shortages.
Plus, is college still a good investment? This is What's News from the Wall Street Journal. I'm Kim Gittleson. Let's get started. Now, before we take a look at what led to Uber's biggest ever quarterly loss, here's what you missed. President Trump ousted the nation's number two intelligence official, Sue Gordon. His allies urged him to do so in order to prevent her from becoming the acting director of national intelligence. That's according to people familiar with the matter. President Trump tweeted yesterday, quote, "Sue Gordon is a great professional with a long and distinguished career. She'll step down on August 15th. Joseph McGuire, the director of the National Counterterrorism Center, will then serve as acting director. And a shortage of a medicine known as immune globulin, which is used to treat immune disorders and other diseases, has forced U.S. hospitals and infusion clinics to suspend treatment for many patients. Peter Loftus says the shortage cropped up relatively recently.
Within the past couple months, some hospitals have basically found what sounds like a somewhat sudden drop in their ability to get this drug. And so what that's meant is that many hospitals have had to call patients or their families, if it's, say a children's hospital, which has been the case, and tell them, you know, you're scheduled for an infusion next week, but we don't have enough to go around and we have to cancel your appointment.
So what's led to the shortage? Peter says it's a couple of factors.
Companies like Takeda and CSL and Grifols, they manufacture immune globulin. And they've been mainly citing increased demand. They say that there's been an increase in the number of people who are using the drug for conditions that have sort of long been the main uses for this drug, but also an increasing number of new uses for the drug.
And it's not just this one medicine. Drug shortages are on the rise.
This decade, really, there's just been a sort of persistent chronic case of drug shortages. And it's been, you know, a combination of sometimes it's drugs that you would get at a pharmacy, but often it's drugs that you would get in a hospital setting.
As of June 30th, there were 282 active U.S. drug shortages, up from 224 a year earlier. That's according to the University of Utah's Drug Information Service. Now, our main story this morning. Uber reported its biggest ever quarterly loss. Shares in the company slid more than 12% in after-hours trading, putting them well below the company's market debut price. To find out more, Charlie Turner has been speaking to Elliot Brown in San Francisco.
Elliot, Uber Technologies posted its largest ever quarterly loss, more than $5.2 billion, according to the story that I saw. What was it that pressured the ride-hailing company's results in the latest quarter?
So there were a couple things, the biggest of which in that giant loss number was IPO-related expenses where they had to recognize a huge amount of stock compensation. So that wasn't a huge concern. I think generally the thing that's been weighing on Uber more macro is the world is more competitive than they would like it to be. And they're just seeing a lot of competition around the globe, especially in Latin America, especially on their food delivery, where prices are really sort of under pressure. They have to pay drivers a lot. You know, and riders and consumers aren't paying sort of enough for the product. So that generally leads to these large continuing losses that we see.
So it's growing its business and expanding its bookings on the one hand, but it's also struggling with, you know, foreign competition in other aspects, and also these heavy driver subsidies.
Exactly. So as a high-level concept, ride-hailing has not evolved in a way or come to the world in a way that is a very sound business practice. These companies have decided to grow really fast and sort of spread their product around rather than try to make money on it. And that's sort of how they started. And it's been very difficult to get away from that when you have two of them competing because neither of them wants to sort of raise prices first to lose market share. So that's the macro backdrop. Now, there were some good signs from the perspective of people who want profitability of these companies in that both Lyft and Uber said that the competitive atmosphere was getting better. That means that the price wars are going down. That means that they've been able to raise prices on some routes. So there are some green shoots out there, though it still looks like it's going to be a ways away.
Yeah. Okay, that was Uber. Let's go back a day. How did Uber's main rival Lyft do? Weren't its results better? Wasn't its revenue better than expected?
Yeah, and one of the biggest, or the biggest difference here is that Lyft is really just focused on the U.S. with a little bit of Canada and just on rides. So Uber is a very different business. They've got a huge amount globally. They also have a huge amount of food delivery money. So they're probably pretty similar in the way they work in the U.S. But Lyft brought in more revenue than expected. They thought the year was going to do better than expected. And their losses are going to be better than expected, narrower than expected. And so they also talked about how they increased prices on some routes. So that's good news for investors, not so much for consumers. But those things were generally seen as positives.
Are there any hints or clues as to when, if at all, these companies are going to make money? I mean, are they giving any hints? You know, hints that investors will want?
I think that they are giving hints that it's going in that direction. I think there's a general view that you can, not a consensus, but a general view that the business can make money if both competitors in a given market have enough scale and they gradually increase prices. But it's not a total certainty. But either way, we're talking about years. We aren't talking about, you know, 6 months. I mean, it's 2, 3, 5 years, depending on which analyst, or more, depending on which analyst you talk to.
You can find all of our earnings season coverage up on WSJ.com. On to markets. Markets stabilized after a tumultuous beginning to the week. Now that the dust has settled a bit, analysts have noticed something interesting that happened, the performance of the U.S. dollar. Our markets reporter, Caitlin Ostroff, breaks it all down.
Yeah, so this week, in lieu of the Chinese sell-off, typically investors go to safe haven assets like the Japanese yen, the Swiss franc, gold, and also the U.S. dollar is seen as a safe haven. But what we saw this week was that instead of the U.S. dollar really holding its own amongst all of these different currencies and safe havens, the euro was actually the place that held steady, especially against gold. And so it's interesting in that people usually expect the dollar to be much stronger, and instead we're seeing this opposite trend, at least for this week. So I guess the question in people's minds is this indicative of something, or is this just an anomaly of this week with current U.S.-China trade tensions?
And now the SCED. Here's what else we're paying attention to today. Statistics out this morning show that Britain's economy contracted in the second quarter. That's the first time it's done so since late 2012. From London, Paul Haddon explains why.
This is all about Brexit and the expected departure time of the UK from the EU. So at the start of the year, businesses thought the UK would be leaving the EU at the end of March. So they stockpiled stuff that they thought they might have difficulty getting their hands on if trade links between the UK and the EU were interrupted. So there was actually a kind of boost to growth in the first quarter. Then Brexit was postponed, and these businesses went, well, we have a lot of stuff on our hands, so let's just use that and not make any new stuff until we've gone through that sort of inventory. So that's more or less what happened.
What are consumers doing in the UK? What did we see in this report when it comes to their purchases?
Consumers are actually carrying on regardless. You know, household spending was up 0.5% in the quarter, which is actually pretty good. And if you look at the consumer confidence surveys, they're holding up pretty well. And you have to remember that half the population voted for Brexit. So those people think Brexit is a good idea. So there's no reason for them to suddenly get spooked by an impending Brexit date or a kind of Brexit. As far as they're concerned, it's going to be good for them. So they're not going to stop spending probably anytime soon until possibly there isn't any stuff in the shops to buy.
And Facebook is offering news outlets millions of dollars for the rights to put their content in a news section that the company hopes to launch later this year. That's according to people familiar with the matter. Representatives from the company have told the likes of ABC News, The Washington Post, and even our parent company, Dow Jones, that they'd be willing to pay as much as $3 million a year to license headlines and previews of articles. It isn't known whether any news outlets have formally agreed yet to license their content to Facebook. Finally, is a college degree still worth the cost? For the most part, the answer is yes. But we're reporting that in recent years, pursuing a degree has become riskier, splitting graduates more widely into haves and have-nots. There are three related shifts causing economists to re-examine the returns on college. The first, wages of college graduates have remained mostly flat this century, after inflation. Second, the cost of attending college has soared. And third, even with higher salaries, significant numbers of college graduates in recent years are failing to build the kind of wealth that previous generations did. So, what do you think? Have you been reevaluating the cost of your degree? Let us know. Tweet us at WSJ Podcasts or email us at whatsnews@wsj.com. We might use some of your comments in a follow-up article. That's What's News from the Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.